Your hometown newspaper of the air brings you What's Doing in Western Michigan. What's Doing in Western Michigan, a transcribed roundup of the news and views from the cities, towns, and countryside of Western Michigan as recounted in the newspapers received during the week in the WKZO newsroom. Your reporter, Willis Dunbar.
Good afternoon. County fairs, overcrowded schools, the polio epidemic, a strike of the grape growers, and the opening of the high school football season were the highlights of the news in Western Michigan last week. The Allegan County Fair got off to a wet start Monday night and Tuesday morning, but the skies cleared on Tuesday noon, and thousands of school children were soon swarming over the grounds. The rest of the week brought ideal fair weather, and the fair ended last night. The Allegan News reported that the crowds exceeded last year's and that the grandstand was crowded for every show. This week is Fair Week in Centerville. A religious service this afternoon at 2:30 opened the exposition. The entertainment features start tomorrow evening with a grandstand show at 8 o'clock. The Centerville Observer estimates that 50,000 people will attend the fair during the week. The paper reports that demands for exhibition space have exceeded all records. Daily purses of $1,000 have been provided for harness racing. Judging of exhibits will be finished by Wednesday noon. Tuesday is Children's Day, and Governor Williams will visit the Centerville Fair on Saturday evening. He'll drive over there following the Michigan-Michigan State game, which he wants to see, and he's scheduled for an appearance at the Centerville Fair at 7 p.m. WKZO will bring its listeners a broadcast from the fairgrounds at Centerville Wednesday afternoon at 5. Another community celebration occurs this week. It's the annual Grape Festival at Pawpaw. The Pawpaw Courier Northerner reports that preparations are complete for this event, which will include a pet parade on Friday afternoon, a parade of bands and floats at 2 Saturday afternoon. WKZO will present a recorded word picture of the parade at Pawpaw next Saturday afternoon at 5. The parade itself will take place, as I said a moment ago, at 2 o'clock. Years ago, traveling stock companies were numerous. Each summer, they'd pitch their tents in towns and villages all over the state. Only one such company is still in business hereabouts, the Slough Players. This organization is owned and operated by a couple who live in Vermontville during the winter. This week, the show will play its closing engagement of the season at Vermontville, opening there on Tuesday night, according to the Nashville News. Toby and Ora, the owners of the show, are well known in dozens of towns in Michigan. The Colon Express estimated last week that 790 visitors attended the Magic Get-Together in Colon this year. A letter in the paper signed by Percy Abbott, manager of the Abbott Magic Company that sponsors the show, indicates, however, that some dissatisfaction exists as to the affair. Consequently, he announced that there will be no magic get-together in Colon next year. It's planned that the get-together of magicians will be resumed in 1951. The football season is with us once more. Next Saturday afternoon at Ann Arbor, Michigan and Michigan State have their annual game. It's going to be broadcast over WKZO starting at 1:45. Of greater interest to hometown folks are the fortunes of their own high school gridiron lads. The lights went up in high school fields all over Western Michigan last Friday night for the first games of the season. And here's a brief commentary on the results as viewed by our WKZO sports statistician, Dick Kishbaugh.
Well, some of those games played last Friday may go a long ways towards deciding who's going to wear the crowns when November rolls around. The town of Watervliet, which hasn't seen a football championship in many, many years, defeated its old rival Hartford by a 7-6 score in the opening game in a little 8 conference. Now, Hartford was the unbeaten champion of the conference last year, but now it looks like Watervliet may be on the way to a title. Another important conference game matched Pawpaw against Plainwell. Plainwell was the Tri-County League champion last year, but Pawpaw was given an even chance to win Friday's game with the Trojans. But when it was all over, though, Plainwell was on the long end of a 20-12 score. So it appears that Plainwell may have the material for another championship. Now, you don't see safeties very often in football, but the margin of victory in two games Friday night was the 2 points scored by a safety. Cassopolis edged Howell Military Academy of Indiana 8-7 on a safety, and Hastings defeated Eaton Rapids 8-6 by the same means. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with football terms, a safety is scored when a player is tackled behind his own goal line, with the opposition scoring the 2 points. Proof that the little teams can whip the big ones once in a while came at Comstock Park near Grand Rapids, where the Comstock Park team defeated South Haven 12-6. Now, Comstock Park is only a small Class C ball club, and South Haven is in the Class B Big 7 Conference. Another school with a small enrollment, Galesburg, turned out a championship team last fall and got off to a good start towards another Kalamazoo Vattle title this year. The Rams defeated Kellogg 25-7 in a game at Galesburg Friday night. There was a football game played at Sturgis Friday, even though Sturgis High School's team wasn't there. Now, the reason for this is that the Branch County 4-H Fair at Coldwater was occupying the football field there Friday night, and that ruled out the game that was scheduled at Coldwater. So, Coldwater and Three Rivers played on a neutral field at Sturgis, about halfway between the two towns, and Coldwater won that game 14-6. And among the other unusual scores Friday night was a 10-0 score that Constantine recorded against Matawan. The 3 extra points in that game came on a 25-yard field goal by Jerry Lubbers. The fine art of kicking field goals seems to have fallen by the wayside in modern football, what with the accent on wide-open forward passing and speed. It seems good to find one high school ball player who can still put the foot in football.
All right, Dick, so much for football. On the more serious side, polio continued to strike in western Michigan last week as the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis conducted an emergency drive for funds. The Greenville Daily News reported the 19th case in Montcalm County last week. At Nashville, the schools were closed Tuesday following the death of a 16-year-old high school girl, Shirley Potter, from the disease. Her sister also has polio, and 3 other victims in Nashville are reported. Superintendent A.A. Reed phoned WKZO yesterday saying the schools would reopen in Nashville on Monday morning. However, parents may keep their children home if they wish, and families in which there are polio cases are specifically requested to keep their children home. School enrollments were breaking all records in almost every district last week. The Allegan News published a picture of a crowded classroom at Allegan, which can seat only 40 children with chairs scattered around. 50 are enrolled, hence it's necessary to divide up the group. Half come in the morning and half in the afternoon. It's a third and fourth grade room. By the way, Allegan voters turned down a proposal for a new school building a few weeks ago. Last week, the grape growers and processors were much in the news. The Lawton Leader reported details of a mass meeting in which farmers voted not to sell their grapes for the price offered. I've asked Carl Collin, our WKZO farm editor, to explain this development and tell you how it turned out. Carl?
Growers resumed their harvesting of grapes in southwestern Michigan yesterday. They hadn't picked or hauled any grapes to the processors for 3 days in protest to the prices offered for this year's crop. Last year, growers received $100 a ton for their grapes, and they wanted at least that much for this year's crop. However, processors offered them only $75 this year, $55 to be paid at time of harvest and $20 in December. The growers claimed that they would lose money on the basis of that offer. They also claimed that this year's crop was light and the processors were not burdened with a large carryover of juice from the 1948 crop. Officials of the Welsh Grape Juice Company, which operates plants at Lawton and Matawan, met with the Growers Committee Friday and agreed to the basic price of $75 per ton for this year's crop, with the stipulation that every effort would be made to pay growers a bonus sometime next year after the juice had been sold. Company officials said that they hoped the bonus would bring the total payment up to about $100 a ton. It was further agreed that an auditor representing the growers would be allowed to check the company books to see that the maximum bonus would be paid growers. And some growers here in this area believe that this last provision of the settlement is the most important result of their protest action of the past few days. Incidentally, grape production in Michigan this year is about equal to the average crop for the state. Latest estimates indicate a total crop of about 33 to 34,000 tons this year. Around 45,000 tons is considered a bumper crop. The average tonnage for the last 10 years runs just a little over 33,500 tons.
All right, Carl. We were glad to receive last week an issue of the Bangor Advance, edited by Phil Wood, and containing lots of news about one of Van Buren County's thriving towns. Lots of apples are growing around Bangor, you know. Last week's issue of the Bangor Advance reported that R.J. Martin, the manager of the Bangor Fruit Exchange, stated that this year's harvest is going to break all records. Growers are urged to market only the best grades, which are selling for about $1.50 a bushel. A flood of Macintosh apples came on the market last week. And Editor Wood reported an interesting story of how one little girl is helping in the polio emergency drive. A 10-year-old named Shirley Hines turned up at the Bangor post office last week with $28.40 in cash, plus a jar of pears and a jar of plums, which she had collected on her own for the drive. The Charlotte Republican Tribune announces that an election will be held in Charlotte September 27 to authorize the building of a new elementary school. The paper last week contained an architect's drawing of the proposed school. A public meeting at the high school tomorrow evening at 8 will give Charlotte voters a chance to ask questions about the proposed building. Here are news items from Allegan. The Allegan News tells that the Allegan County Health Department will present its story to the public at an open house at its quarters in the courthouse next Thursday evening from 7 to 9. The Allegan Gazette tells that a nationally circulated publication called Crossroads is to be published in Allegan. The editor is the Reverend Maxwell Brown, pastor of the Allegan Episcopal Church. The Hastings Banner tells that the Bliss Company of Hastings has started construction of a large new two-story office building. Next, here is Joe Butler with a few of the stories in the news.
Paul Armentrout of Allegan finally caught the culprit that's been ruining his garden all summer. It was a woodchuck that weighed 14.25 pounds. Manuals on the subject state that 13.5 pounds is the heaviest woodchuck weight on record. The Building Banner News tells that Grandma Shannon of Building celebrated her birthday last week in her usual way. She took 32 kids downtown and bought them all ice cream cones. She's 81. Somebody stole $300 from Mrs. Vern Perucci of Bronson a year ago. A week ago last night, she left her purse containing $250 in a store on the counter. She phoned the merchant Sunday morning and went back to the store and found her purse where she had left it. She came back to town Monday and put her money in the bank, says the Sturgis Journal. Headline in the Coloma Courier, Courteous Cop Captures Queen's Conveyance. Seems that someone stole a bicycle won by Lois Butler, Coloma's Gladiola Queen. Officer William Talbert found it for her. The Sturgis Journal tells that Gail Harris of Cherubusco, Indiana, north of Fort Wayne, has a new plan for catching a mammoth turtle named Oscar that has eluded him for months. He's going to pump out all the water from the lake that Oscar lives in. He came to this conclusion following his latest attempt to capture the wily turtle. He sent electrical impulses into the lake. Oscar came to the surface, slightly stunned, but submerged before he could be snared.
Thank you, Joe. We've time now for only a few random items. Voters will be asked to authorize bonds to finance additions and improvements to the municipal electric plant in Constantine, according to the Constantine Advertiser Record. That election is to be held tomorrow. The Three Rivers Commercial, in an editorial last week, urged local folks to be friendly to newcomers. They hadn't ought to get the idea that Three Rivers is a coal city, says the editorial. The Lowell Ledger tells that the Lowell Showboat this year earned $3,000 and that the proceeds have been divided between the school and the Legion Memorial Building. The Ionia Sentinel Standard says that the livestock auction barn fire there several weeks ago resulted in a $21,000 loss and was Ionia's biggest blaze in 15 years. Now here's a note on the weather. We'll be back next Sunday with another edition of your hometown newspaper of the air, and what's doing in Western Michigan. The preceding program was transcribed.